Okay. I think this music will keep you better on track. I won't take such a wide veer off course. And we don't need to be doing that today. We need to get to the fishing report. Where we left off from part one, we had just done Bow Bay, Turtle Bay, and Placida. I think you had done Lemon Bay a little bit. We were going to walk the beaches. So, Fishing Frank in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, and welcome back to a Radio Fishing Area Fishing Report. Not the nonsense we just posted, but probably the good stuff. I don't think it was nonsense, but it wasn't Fishing Report.
Right.
So, anyway, sometimes you just got to say what you're thinking.
Sometimes babbling is a good thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's me. All right, so we don't do that again. All right, shut up, Frank. Okay, go away. All right, Robert, walking the beaches. Now, let's start up by Venice. What's been going on? You hear anything by Venice?
Venice has been very sketchy reports. I don't know why. I mean, some of the guys are going up there at night and fishing the passes, but as far as along the beach, all I'm getting is a few reports of some whiting and a few pompano. But as you work your way south, I start to get more consistent reports from the Inglewood and the Boca Grande area.
Of?
Snooker starting to move out onto the beaches.
You know, you can't just go up getting more consistent reports and stop. Come on. You got to go somewhere else with this. Okay, let's get the details. Snooker moving along the beaches.
Snooker moving out there along the beaches. Whiting are obviously everywhere. Pompano have been scattered up and down. Some reports of some jacks and even a few oddball blue runners mixed in with those jacks, which is strange.
Well,
I mean, you hear about it every now and then. It's just a little strange.
One of the scientists I was talking to said that it's never a good sign when you see two species mingling together.
Nope.
Because
never is.
What it really means is that there's not enough of their particular species, because for fish like blue runners and small jack crevel and stuff like that, it's, you know, they're out there trying to eat stuff, but everything bigger than them is trying to eat them, so it's
safety in numbers.
Yeah, safety in numbers. Hopefully they eat the guy next to me and not me. You know, I don't have to be faster than the shark, I just have to be faster than that guy.
Right.
You know? So, anyway, so blue runners, jacks, I'm hearing a little bit about Spanish mackerel. Haven't heard any kings caught off the beach, but a few Spanish, a couple of flounder here and there. So fishing, and this is getting more and more true as you work your way south towards Sanibel and down towards Estero. I haven't heard anything out of Estero recently.
No, not at all.
We're going to have to start including them. I've got to, you know, I still know what to do with all that.
Right.
But let's take it down by the pass, Gasparilla Pass.
Gasparilla Pass itself, been some really nice mangrove snapper right there in that nice little hole just at the entrance of the pass. There's also been quite a few tarpon mixed in down there. Miscellaneous sharks of all assorted sizes. Been some pompano, an oddball sheep's head, and an oddball redfish.
All right, coming down to Boca Grande Pass.
Boca Grande's been pretty crazy. The mangrove snappers have been incredible in that 30 to 36 feet of water on the southern side of the channel, you know, closer towards Cayo Costa side.
Mm-hmm.
The gags, I've had so many reports of some big gags being caught through there in the last 10 days. Unfortunately, the season's closed. Getting some mixed reports too.
When does gag open up?
June 1st this year.
June 1st, okay. So we still got a month to go.
Yep.
All right.
June 1st, and they raised it 2 more inches, so it's 24 inches now.
See, shark face is my, you know, actual walking encyclopedia here.
What else is going on?
Yeah, I'm not letting it go.
That's all good.
I'm not letting it go.
I'm good with it.
I'm going to be, my inner Trump is coming out. I'm not letting it go.
Lots of sharks of assorted sizes, too. You know, there's mainly been some bigger sharks in there, but there have been quite a few smaller sharks, especially as you get out of the pass a little bit, or just inside the pass. And then there's also been the,
I got you on that one.
Exactly.
I destroyed you. Okay. Where are you at? You lost me.
In the pass itself, in Boca Grande Pass.
In Boca Grande Pass. Well, I will tell you, the fishing is pretty good there. You've got the gags, the snappers, and the tarpon that you expect. You've got sharks coming in and out. The one thing that is confusing, though, is the jig rules, because people are all worried about, forget the tarpon, they're there trying to catch fish. It had nothing to do with tarpon at all, but all the rules apply. 3 rods a boat, you know, the operator of the boat, you know, or captain cannot fish. I mean,
somebody has to be behind the helm at all times.
Yeah, all these weird tarpon rules that have nothing to do with regular fishing are still in effect, no matter if you're there for snapper or grouper or Spanish mackerel or whatever you, or sharks or whatever you're doing, all the crazy rules apply.
Right.
All the rules from the, you know, I'm going to pee in your sandbox, and if you take a leak in mine, and, you know, back and forth between all the whiners out there. And so now all these people, I bet you I've had 10 calls in the last week where I've tried to explain to them about the hook and the weight.
Right.
Because the hook cannot be above the weight. Well, if you're right. fishing grouper, it's not a problem because your weight is above the hook.
Right.
You know, you put your weight on, you have your leader and your hook below it. So it's perfectly legal. But the guy wanted to use a double drop, like a chicken rig, they call it, where the
right.
weight's at the bottom
okay,
and the
yeah.
thing's off. Now, I have seen that presented as a legal rig on the FWC website, but it is absolutely illegal according to their definition of how
Pass
it has
rules.
To be put together, because the weight has to be above the hooks. But here you have two hooks coming out on the sides with, you know, a little bit of leader and a hook there and a little bit of leader and a hook, and then a weight below it. FWC says that's legal, but the weight is below the hook.
Right.
So how can that be legal? I liked, we have some truly amazing FWC officers. Every group has a couple of jerks in it. Don't go there if you run into a bad one. But for by and large, they're really cool people. And he says he misses the days of the old Marine Patrol, because the uniforms were gray and the law was gray and you could kind of work back and forth with stuff. He says, you know, I miss the days of the old grayness, you know, where
yeah.
you didn't have to be quite so this and this, and everybody's, you know, you could work with people, and, you know, they were kind of ambassadors on the water more so than they are now. I do give FWC a lot of credit for being an on-the-water ambassador and not just being there to fine and, you know, and wreak havoc upon, you know, people who just don't know or don't understand.
Right.
And I think most of them have an amazing ability to comprehend the difference between a guy who's trying to get away with something and should be mega fined. And, I mean, some instances, I really almost think they should take their boat. I mean, some of these people are blatant. And I had a charter boat captain in here. I really upset him because he was bragging to me that they were doing these illegal things. He said, well, I'm a captain. It doesn't matter. And I'm looking at him going, well, in my opinion, because you're
it
a captain,
matters more.
It matters more. You should be put under the jail. If
yeah.
you're knowingly breaking the law because you think it's okay because you're a charter boat captain, I'm sorry, he's got a little six-pack license. I have a master's license.
Right.
I'm sorry, you know, that whole license thing don't mean anything to me. I've taken all the tests from, you know, the six-pack all and up and got all the endorsements and all that stuff. And to me, it's the person holding the license and what they stand for.
Absolutely.
And we are supposed to be merchant marine officers. We're supposed to conduct ourselves on a better level than the average fisherman. And to be blatantly telling me, well, I break the law and I do it routinely and FWC doesn't care because I'm a captain, to me that was just tag, I'm out. You know, go
right.
somewhere else and buy your stuff.
Yeah,
I don't want
away.
You here. And so anyway, getting back to that, that's the confusion in Boca Grande Pass right now. The tarpon laws do apply even if you're snapper fishing or grouper fishing or whatever. It's another one of those things where we call it Florida. Okay, so anyway, moving down to Captiva Pass, a little more normal aspect of the world. It's only a couple miles south, but it does come back into the real world aspect.
Right.
They do have tarpon in there,
tarpon.
A lot of sharks, more grouper. I'm
yeah,
going to say more grouper than Boca Grande Pass.
Yeah, the gag grouper have been intense down there too.
Yeah, I really think that the gags are thicker in Captiva than they are in Boca Grande Pass, as well as the snapper. I think
yeah.
the fishing's actually a little better for the non-tarpon. Tarpon fishing's definitely better in Boca Grande Pass, but if you're not doing tarpon, you might want to really look at Captiva, because I actually think it's better fishing.
Less pressure.
Less pressure, better fishing, and you don't have to deal with the tarpon laws for Boca Grande Pass.
Right.
You know, if you have four people on the boat, all four of you can fish.
Right.
In Boca Grande Pass, only three of you can fish, you know. And then if you go down to Redfish Pass, I have not heard of anything, but I think the snook thing should be kicking off anytime now.
That's what I was going to say, because I haven't heard much either, but traditionally speaking, it's usually a late May thing when the snook really pile up and they're good.
And now, if you go to Redfish Pass, because you've heard us talking about it, you want to go down there, This is not something that you can go down there and say, I'm going to do what I want to do. You either join in and do what they do there, or go look and leave. Go away. You don't need to go down there and disrupt what people have been doing for a long, long time. And it's weird snook fishing because you use a half-ounce sinker, you've got a bait on, and they go out in the pass, and on an incoming tide, they drift around the corner and up inside, and you get your chance to catch the fish, and then the next boat comes through and drifts, and you go back and get in line. And it's not where I want to do what I want to do. Right. If you're that type of person, do not go to Redfish Pass. This has been going on for decades. It's a well-rehearsed, well-oiled machine. Everybody gets along. Everybody gets a chance to catch fish. It's fun. It's interesting. The first time I did it, I was absolutely hooked. I was enthralled. It was just an amazing experience. And the best way to learn how to do it is to go there, put your boat back, and watch.
Sit back on the sidelines and just watch for a few minutes.
If you know, if you're the type of boat that doesn't want to watch and learn, don't go to Redfish Pass, because you're just going to ruin everybody's day. Because you know, if you got to do that fast and furious going up the interstate, you know, zigzagging between the cars, because you're going to get there first. I'm sorry, 200 million people have been there before you. You're never going to get anywhere first anymore. This is something that's well orchestrated and amazing to watch, amazing to see, and great fish to catch. And it's a beautiful symphony of everything that works. So, but we don't even know if it's happening right now.
No.
So why am I carrying on?
I don't know.
I'm an idiot. Okay. All right. Mark me down. Okay. Frank, second dumb thing for the day. All right. Two dumb things for me today. One more and I get to go home. Okay.
No, you don't get to do it. You've got a different appointment first.
Yeah,
then
I
got
to go to the dentist today. And I got to go meet with somebody else. I got a meeting and a dentist thing and all that. So, anyway, going down to Ponarasa, the next one south.
I haven't heard anything down around Ponarasa except for right there at the Sanibel Causeway. You know, they've been catching some tarpon there, a couple big goliaths, and an assortment of small sharks. You know, that's all I have heard about. Other than, you know, I know that there should be some redfish, some Spanish mackerel, some trout, because they're always fairly consistent around that bridge and around the Ponarasa docks.
I love going there at this time of year.
It's quiet.
It's there. You know, the some of the snowbirds that live there, and you know, a little more hoity-toity. You know,
yeah,
they're not there right now. They've gone back to wherever they go to, and you've got a lot of tourists there right now. And there's quite a few people, but it's a changed atmosphere on that south end of Sanibel this time of year. And I enjoy Sanibel any time of the year, and pretty much everybody I've ever met there's been really nice. But there is a subtle change in the atmosphere. And
genuineness of it rather than a almost superficialness.
I don't know. I have a hard time describing it. I'll accept that. I'm not sure I'm going to go along with it, but I'm going to accept that. I am not ready to endorse you yet.
Nice.
I can't help it. It just comes out.
I'm surprised you haven't painted the office red, white, and blue yet, for crying out loud.
So anyway, we're going to leave this debate for a later time, and we're going to go right out into the Gulf of Mexico. And
that's been awesome.
Okay, well, I'm not sure. What are you doing?
I was going to show you a picture real quick for your political crap.
Oh, that's okay. I'm, you know, yes. Yes, I've seen that one. Yes, I'm a Trump junkie. I love watching the whole thing go out. And, I, you know, it's nothing to do with anything except it is completely entertainment. This is just 2006 to me. 16 has been, you know, a year of, all of a sudden everybody's looking around going, what's going on? It's like we've all been asleep for a few years and everybody's just waking up, and for better or worse, and love him, hate him, and I get why you would do both. There was no doubt in my mind, but I think we all have to agree, the one thing we've done is we've woke up. And we're looking at everybody in a very real thing. Same as the corporations. I think that's the biggest thing, as I talked about in that little mini segment, is corporations are waking up and looking at the consumer, saying, what does the consumer want? Remember Ronald Reagan did a trickle-down theory? You know, where they did all this and it was supposed to tinkle down on top of our heads? You know? And I don't know if it worked or didn't work. I mean, I was making a living at the time, not paying much attention. But the one thing that all this has affected is companies are actually looking at consumers. So I'm going to shut up, and we're going to go into the Gulf of Mexico. We need to know what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. What's happening there, Robert? My coffee's done. I'm going to grab a cup of coffee while you do this.
Okay. Gulf of Mexico has been incredible right now. Anywhere from 3 to 15 miles, the mangrove snapper bite's been phenomenal, along with some really good lanes, which is cool because the last 2 years now, it just seems to it's staying consistent with the lanes and the big mangroves. The gag grouper is starting to really perk up this past 2 weeks out there. Unfortunate catch and release, but still fun. The Spanish mackerel are all over the place, scattered, and the bonita are scattered all over out there. You're seeing them blitzing on the surface at about that 7 to 25 mile mark. There's also been some blackfin tuna mixed in with those bonita out there.
Yeah, I'm back. The you know, I have to keep. The doctor can't figure out why my blood pressure is perfect, why my heart rate's perfect, why my weight is perfect, and all that. I said caffeine and nicotine, that's my diet. I said I would never recommend it for somebody else, but it seems to work for me. But then again, I am sick all the time. You know,
right.
I did have to get health care. I got fined on my taxes for not having health care last year.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah. Yay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so anyway, I heard blackfin tuna. Now, we have to pause and go to blackfin tuna. Somebody in our midst has been out catching, actually went fishing and caught a fish. The weather was not horrible.
No.
And he went out and caught a fish. And who is that little boy who caught a fish who had a birthday yesterday? Happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday, little Robert, happy birthday to you.
Your wife's cake was phenomenal, too, by the way. The wife enjoyed it, too, last night.
Yeah,
that's an understatement. It's,
you know,
amazing.
The only thing her and I agreed on was with the first piece, it was perfect. By the second piece, the white frosting had a little too much sugar in it.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I don't know.
What I like about her, you know, when we get done is, you know, she makes these things, and you know it's going to be a great cake if it just looks terrible. Like it's sliding off of each other, and it's kind of falling apart. She's putting it together with toothpicks, and it comes out with the most amazing flavor on the planet. I mean, right. She just, if it's all really, really perfect and it looks gorgeous, you're kind of suspect. I don't know why that is.
But, that's funny.
You know, she's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Blackfin tuna, you caught one. What, yeah. You were out.
We went out to the
Robert Moore, right?
Yeah, Robert Moore and my Aunt Susie.
Your Aunt Susie, okay.
Yeah, she was down visiting from California, and she likes to fish, so we decided to... Her birthday was a week and a half ago. Mine was yesterday. Figured while she was here for the weekend, we'd go out and try to screw with the fish gods, because they usually don't like me when I'm out fishing, so we figure if we go out...
I think it was your Aunt Susie's influence.
Oh, well, I'm sure
I've met
it was.
Her. I mean, you know, I can see why the gods like her.
Yeah. So, either way, it worked out. The weather was beautiful. We tried for tarpon. That didn't work. Tried for some bigger sharks. That didn't work. And so we decided to run out to there's been some shrimp boats outside of the pass. From what I understand, they're gone today. But they were just outside of the pass about 6 miles. And there's been a lot of sharks around them. Plus, they're going to draw in Spanish mackerel, king mackerel, bonita. So we started drifting for some sharks, had a few fish on, and then all of a sudden the bonita showed up right behind the boat and our chum. So we started chumming a little harder and got the bonita going, started catching a few of those. Figured we'd try a couple, you know, fresh bonita for shark bait, and I hooked what I thought was probably like a big spinner or something along those lines, because my line just started peeling off. I've never actually had that much line taken off my tarpon reel before. I mean, I was using, you know, my heavy spinning gear, and it dumped over 150 yards of line off like it was nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
I had it set with tarpon drag too. I mean, I was going to just horse them, you know, bonita in so they wouldn't get eaten, so we could use them for bait to try to catch them, you know, and ended up landing that big blackfin. It's my personal biggest blackfin. We didn't weigh it on a scale, but, I mean, the fish was well over the 30-pound mark. I would put it close to 35. It was impressive. It was fun. It was a really, really good fight, and we hooked a couple other fish that we truly believe were probably blackfin because the amount of line that they peeled off too. The first fish we thought actually might have got eaten at first, and then we realized, well, that acted just like the blackfin that I had just caught before, so that one was...
How big was yours?
Probably 35 pounds.
35 pounds.
You got an email. I sent it to you.
Yeah, I saw the picture, but I didn't...
Well over 30 pounds. No problem.
No. Did you eat it or let it go?
We ate it. The family ate it, and Robert took some, and all my uncle and aunt and all that.
Okay, how was it?
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Very phenomenal.
Amazing. Now, yes. I'm not sure if you said it, because I was trying to type in something here. What did you catch it on?
That one, I can't remember if it was a small thread fin or if it was cut bait, because we hooked so many fish on both. I don't remember what I had on at that moment.
What kind of fish were you cutting for bait?
Thread fins.
So either a live thread fin or cut thread fin.
Uh-huh.
And you hooked a bonita, blackfin tuna, all that on them. So really good day.
And even a few on shrimp too. I mean, we had them chummed up literally where they're hanging behind the boat coming up, that we were just hanging the rod over the side with the bait sitting on the surface, and they'd come up and hit it.
Really?
Yeah.
That had to be spectacular.
That was cool.
I bet Aunt Susie was, her eyes were about 4 inches across.
And when she landed, we let her fight the few bonita, and she got them up, and she just, they're an amazing looking fish, way underrated, you know, but beauty wise, they're really a spectacular looking fish. When you land them, they're so lit up.
Yeah.
You know, the blues and the dark blues and the turquoise and the greens. And I mean, they're just an amazing looking little torpedo. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the name actually means beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, yeah. You know.
So it was a fun day, and we saw a dozen spinner sharks launch, just free jumpers. You know, launch 10 feet in the air. Awesome.
It's hard to imagine when I first came down, the very first time back, I think it was 1980, I finally got it to go out to Boca Grande Pass. We went out tarpon fishing. And all of a sudden here, for no reason at all, here's this 6-foot fish come straight up out of the water. And it was later in the day, so the sun was in the west. And he came up perfectly so that the sun just glinted down the whole side of that silver fish on a tarpon coming up. And it's, you literally do not believe you just saw that.
Right.
Your brain does not accept it. You look at it, you register the point that you saw that fish, but you just cannot accept that that was real, because, you know, being from the Midwest, I had never even dreamed of anything like that.
Right.
And then the first time you see eagle ray, or, you know, the spotted rays come out of the water and do a backflip, and then to watch a shark, literally see a shark that looks a lot like a big bull shark, launch himself straight up out of the water.
Yeah.
That did things to my brain for a couple of weeks.
Well, and the corkscrew, too, a lot of times. So to see him go in the air and just literally do 2 to 4 complete rotations, it's like, how did it do that?
Yeah. I mean, it's like an ice skater doing one of those jumps where they go up and they spin in the air and come back down.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there going, that was a shark.
Yeah.
I mean, no, that was a shark.
Yeah.
That shark just jumped 10 feet out of the water, and I'm in here in a boat, and I'm 3 feet off the water.
Right. I've thought about that, too. It's like, what would happen if that did that, like, close to us?
Well, you know? When you're running. And I don't think it's ever happened, but the odds are one day it will. So I might be going along with an open boat, and a shark will just do one of those free jumps, and it'll land in the boat.
Right.
And these are big fish. I mean, 5, 6, 7-foot sharks. You know,
scary.
No, but just incredulous.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time I saw it, I'm thinking to myself, and it did kind of mess with my head a little bit, because I've been on the water here about a year the first time I saw it, and that was a shark. And the guy with me, he says, yeah, that was a shark. And I'm like, no, I mean, that was a shark. It just came out of the water. I mean, did you see it up there in the air? And, you know, it was just one of those weird things. But anyway, we've gone on about that. Anything left in the Gulf we got
to
do?
Going way out, you know, if you're willing to go out to that 110 to 130 feet of water, that's where your red grouper are definitely doing better. Your AJs are doing phenomenal. Been getting a couple mixed reports of some small sailfish and some small dolphin out there also that guys are seeing and or hooking. So it's kind of a killer time overall for a good variety of species. You know, other than that, that's about it.
No, that's not bad.
No.
That's good.
No, not at all.
All right, so we went up there, and we did kind of did that. Let's go down by St. James City, that lower end of Sanibel, this, where the Coosahatchee comes out. And I have not heard anybody fishing on the Coosahatchee. I know nothing about
what's about what's going on in the Coosahatchee other than out on the front side of Sanibel, that Knapp's Point area.
Right.
Some really big sharks, a lot of tarpon. There's a couple small reefs right out there. There's the Edison Bridge Reef, which is a little further south, but then there's a couple small reefs just above that. I've been hearing of some good permit action down there, and they're not the giants that we're kind of used to, but they're in that 10 to 15 pound range, which is still incredible. You know, and that's about what I've heard right in that vicinity. The St. James City, Sanibel's just been the tarpon, mostly in small shark. Coming up from St. James City along the ICW, lots and lots of tarpon cruising in and out, right in that 4 to 6 feet of water range. If they're in big groups, they've been a little on the funky side for getting them to chew, so the guys that have had the best results have been anchoring and dead baiting. You know, taking frozen thread fins, frozen sardines, fresh catfish tails, even pinfish, and just throwing them out there and setting them under a cork or setting them right on the bottom. You're going to sit there and get beat up by the pinfish and the sharks and the catfish and all that junk. But when they come by, they're picking up your bait. The fly fishermen are having a field day down there, though, because they're actually just taking their time and being real stealthy and looking for those singles and double fish and throwing their, you know, just throwing their little flies at them, and have been pretty successful. So, and this time of year, the water's so beautiful and clear down there. Once you get one visual on how to see a fish sitting in a sand hole, it's kind of like deer hunters that drive down the road at 60 miles an hour. They can spot a deer like that, you know, in a tree line. It's kind of the same thing here. Once you have it pointed out to you, once you can see that tarpon or that snook or that redfish sitting in that sand hole, and then figure out how you want to stalk them.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool stuff. People don't realize in more modern fishing, the way we're doing it now, and because we're using smaller and smaller boats and that we can kind of go around and you can actually go fairly slow and stay on plane, and how much more hunting in the last few years fishing has evolved into.
Yeah.
And it's a really cool thing. But coming up through Pine Island Sound, now this is from St. James City, working our way up towards Boquillia on the flats and in the intercoastal. What do you got over there?
I'm hearing of a lot of good fish right there around Captiva Rocks all the way up to Boquillia. Some mixed redfish, not a ton of them. It's been weird for them. You're just finding a handful. But the snook are really staged up well around all those islands and some of those deeper cuts around some of those little tiny patches of oysters and islands that are around there, along with the tarpon, Spanish mackerel, mixed variety of sharks of assorted sizes. Hearing of some gag grouper down there in some of those deep cuts too, those guys that, you know, I mean, you've showed it to me, we've talked about it before, with those deep cuts that are under those mangrove bushes. You pitch in there and you're hoping for a snook, and you pull out a 30-inch gag, you know, it catches you off guard immensely.
On the last one, I was talking about how beautiful Gasparilla Sound is. Well, Pine Island Sound has a lot of those same just amazing aspects to it, because on Pine Island Sound, Boca Grande Pass catches the top of it. Captiva Pass is right on the top, about a quarter of the way down on the Pine Island. Then you have Redfish Pass that's down three quarters of the way on the island, and then on the bottom of it coming out you have Ponarasa. So there's literally four passes to help clear that water up, you know, as it all becomes brown. It's one of the first areas to get nice.
Right.
Gasparilla Sound between Boca Grande Pass and Gasparilla Pass, that clears up second, but with literally four passes affecting Pine Island Sound, it's got a lot of water flow, it's got a lot of water movement, and it is a very special place, and it's beautiful right now, absolutely gorgeous.
Right, and it is a little trickier to navigate than, say, like that area between Gasparilla Pass and Boca Grande, because that's pretty much all flat bottom, which is the intercoastal drop-off, versus the Sound, you've got so many weird oyster bars that are 50 yards and 100 yards away from a mangrove island.
I've launched my boat in the air down there, not paying attention, because I'm going along and all of a sudden came up on an oyster bed and the boat literally went airborne because I didn't pay attention, and here the water went from 14 inches deep to 2 inches deep.
Right.
And the boat went right up in the air, splat down, freaks you out. You
know? Absolutely.
You got to hold on, but it's, you got to pay attention down there.
Yeah.
It is, Gasparilla Sound is all pretty even. It's very shallow, and you have to know where you're going, what you're doing, and all that. Number one, not to destroy any habitat. Two, just to make it through. But in Pine Island Sound, you have to be much more on the ball.
Absolutely.
You really have to know where you're going. And if you don't know where you're going, go slow, for God's sake.
Very slow, yeah.
Coming back around with up from there, let's drop over to Boquilla, north end of Pine Island.
Boquilla's been pretty good. That whole area from Jug Creek Shoal all the way around the front side of Boquilla. There's been tarpon on the outside edge of those two little sandbars that are on the north end of Boquilla. But on the inside of those sandbars, been trout, Spanish mackerel, jacks, ladyfish. I mean, just a whole miscellaneous of stuff, including a lot of little sharks of assorted species. Been some good cobia activity scattered from right off that fishing pier there on Boquilla all the way out to, say, marker 4. So it's just, it's a good mixed gamut of just about anything you kind of want to fish for. And that grass flat, there's deep grass there, there's shallow grass there. I mean, there's grass out there in like 8 feet of water that you can sometimes see. It's just, it's an amazing habitat for so many different species.
Inside and outside of the bar.
Yeah.
A lot of people forget that when we're talking about Boquilla, you've got that whole area ringed in by sandbars, islands, and all the rest of that stuff. And then you come right outside of that, and you have a whole different selection of fish, from sharks, big snook, tarpon, all that right outside the bar.
Right.
And it's all kind of, and I mean, literally, it's a matter of 30 feet.
Yeah.
30 to 50 feet, and you're from one type of fishing into another type of fishing.
Yeah.
Very cool place. Swing around. Let's go down to Mat Lachey. Under the bridge, we got a lot of snook down there. A few leftover sheephead, some snapper activity. Redfish both north and south of Mat Lachey. Not huge numbers, but fishable numbers. If you're going south, it's kind of going on, but you got to look for them.
They're
not a, you know, it's not obvious redfish fishing, but when you find them, you're going to find a few.
The weird part is that's the only place I'm hearing about consistency, though, as far as redfish. Everywhere else, it's like,
hit or miss.
I caught one.
Yeah.
I caught two today. You know, it's weird.
But even coming north, all the way up to the Ice House 2 and Indian Fields and all that, there are redfish in there. And you can fish for them. It is, that area around Mat Lachey right now has some of the better redfish fishing.
Yeah.
Coming up to Two Pines, anything you hear about there?
Not a whole lot right immediately around Two Pines, except for straight out in front in that deeper trough that goes basically on the outside of the bar up towards Burnt Store. A lot of tarpon cruising that deeper 6 to 8 feet of water. A lot of small sharks. And then when you get on the inside, fishing the bushes from there up to Burnt Store, snook are scattered all up and down from the bar into the bushes.
Gotcha.
You know, oddball redfish lost in there with them. I've had a couple guys say that they skipped a few pompano in there, but just didn't catch them, but saw them. So that's a positive.
That's a lot of the story with pompano. And I think a lot of people need to start bobber jigging for them.
Right.
I think that bobber jigging is going to become kind of the normal way for the people who don't get to fish for them on a regular basis, putting a little tiny jig below a bobber, casting out, and letting the waves bounce it so that the pompano have a better chance of hooking up with it. A shrimp under a bobber, a popping cork.
Right.
All these things that we more associate with trout fishing and all that have proven to be so effective on Spanish mackerel and all these other species that I think you're going to see more this year of people seeing them, and it's worked in several cases.
Right.
So I just think it's rather than trying to learn the fish and a new technique and new everything else, going back to some of the basics with the bobber and the jig, the bobber and the shrimp, and using the popping corks to get those Pompano more interested in what's happening right there.
Right.
So I think that's going to be a bigger thing.
Plus, I think you're a little bit more in the strike zone with those guys. I mean, they're not just right on the bottom all the time when they're moving around. They're kind of up a little bit off the bottom, you know, 6 inches to 2 feet off the bottom.
Well, if you're in 6 feet of water, they're literally, a school goes by, they're from 6 inches off the bottom to 6 inches from the top.
Yeah.
And what better than a bobber to keep you in the strike zone?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Go 3 feet below the float. And I think this is going to be a bigger thing. And a mix-up of maybe a popping cork and a crappie jig, or a popping cork small hook and a small shrimp, something like that. It's something's going to happen. Somebody's going to figure out some little way that really kind of lights up the whole pompano bite, because they are tremendously hard hookup. You know,
right.
They see them, and they come back on them, and they're just not getting them. And I think staying in the strike zone is better. It's the reason trolling is not allowed in bass tournaments, because the lure's in the water 100% of the time.
Yeah.
And when you cast, the lure's in the air, you know, a third of the time. When you fly fish, the lure's in the air more than it's in the water.
Right.
So just by keeping the lure there, the bait in front of them, I think it's going to help. But coming around now, everybody wants to know what's happening on the east side, the East Keys. The east side of the harbor is a bunch of keys or small islands, you know, that come out from the shoreline in the buffer zone. We have a buffer zone that prevents people from building within about a quarter mile or half a mile of the side of Charlotte Harbor, except in a couple places like Pirate Harbor and Burnt Store. And there is a couple more pieces of private property there.
Right.
That found out about it. I don't know exactly where they are. I'd love to know, because I'd like to buy one.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just so I could put a little dock and a cottage on it, you know, and, you know, be able to utilize it. But that east side is such a unique environment, because the sandbar cuts it off from the harbor.
Yeah.
And for most of its length, from Pirate Harbor, you've got about a half a mile north, quarter mile north, where it's very fairly indistinct bar. You get a lot of fish going back and forth and crossing through there. But as you get further north, it becomes a very defined separation wall between middle of harbor, open harbor, and flats.
Yeah.
So what's going on back there in that flat?
A lot of snook. The snook are moving out of, you know, what few snook moved up into the major creeks and canals up in the, you know, upper end of the harbor, are all starting to migrate down that entire east side. Every bush seems to have at least a couple snook hanging around it.
Green means go. If it's green and leafy and overhanging the water, there's probably fish under it.
Yep.
Brown, dead sticks. They're just, if they're laying into the water, you've got a 50-50 shot. But the sun's becoming stronger again. I mean, the sunshine, as it starts protruding into the water, it's the same as you, me, every animal on the planet would rather be in the shade than in the sun by afternoon.
Right. Absolutely. Been a few redfish scattered in there with them, a lot of small sharks on the bar, and a lot of cobia up and down that whole bar. There's been some big stingrays cruising around there, but there's also been quite a few manatees on top of the bar, and the cobia have been following them. Even though it's shallow, there's guys talking about seeing manatees literally in 2.5 feet of water, 3 feet of water, freaking them out, quite frankly, because you don't expect to see them up in there. But right now, a lot of them are mating, so they are moving up under those sandbars where they can have their good time.
Yeah.
But while they're disturbing the bottom, and as they're swimming along, they're
Harry meets Krusty.
Right.
But, yeah, it's really weird, because you'll be sitting there fishing the backside of an island, and all of a sudden, up on the side of the boat plops this big, hairy, whiskered snout.
Yeah.
And, you know,
a walrus without the tusks.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll freak out, because, I mean, I've had them literally come up and lay their head there and slobber on my foot.
And how can a 1,000-pound animal be that sneaky in 2 and 3 feet of water? It freaks you out.
Yeah.
I mean, just turn around and all of a sudden, whoa, hey.
Oh, yeah.
8 foot long.
I've seen people, and I've never understood this behavior. All of a sudden, they're sitting there, and a manatee comes up, drops their head on the side of the boat, and they run off the other side of the boat into the water.
Meh.
Now, excuse me, I can see running into the bottom of the boat to hide. Why would you go into the water with something that just scared you from the water?
Right.
You know, I mean, no. That's a part of the behavior I don't get. My first instinct is to either freeze or attack. And right. It's usually freeze, figure it out, because one thing, jumping doesn't help.
No.
It doesn't help.
So, me, unfortunately, I'm one of the jumpers. I'm not going to jump out of the boat, but chances are I might jump hard enough where I lose my balance and fall out of the boat.
Get that. But, you know, anyway, so there's a lot of cool stuff down there. The east side of the harbor is always a very special yeah. place. Getting around to Alligator Creek, I'm hearing some jacks, a little once in a blue moon trout, some snapper activity, and a lot of snook.
Yeah, I'm kind of, that's about what I've been hearing, too. It's good, but it's not anything major. With all the other activity that's in such close proximity, I think a lot of guys are kind of bypassing it.
The only place I know, the one of the better spots for snook there is that little island right before you come out. And
on the left or the right?
Well, if I'm going in on the right, and if I'm coming out on the left,
okay.
Depends on which way you're going.
How about
on the southern side?
North side or south side?
Southern side. But let's take a look at the area from the skating rink up around Mangrove Point, Whorehouse Point.
A lot of snook up in there, quite a few redfish.
It's just bunched with snook.
Yeah. The wade fishermen haven't been in there a whole lot because the stingrays are in there, you know, popping out. So there's been a good amount of smaller stingrays and larger stingrays hanging out on that flat.
Yeah, this is not the best time of year to be wade fishing.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
I think it's one of the coolest things you can do when you come to Florida is go walk in the water, catch the fish, and be that much closer to it all.
Yeah.
But this is the time of year when it's a little more dangerous.
Better because, do the shuffle.
Yeah, you got to keep your feet on the bottom. You've got to, you know, pay attention to what you're doing and have a little bit of luck, because luck plays a big factor into it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if you don't feel like you're exactly the lucky person, it probably best to stay in the boat right now. Getting around to Ponce de Leon Park, I'm hearing of a little bit of sheephead, some spade fish being caught at Ponce.
Mm-hmm.
Snapper activity is as a normal.
I think it's a little below normal. I mean, it's average, but I think it's a little on the lower end of average. I think that dredging that they did kind of made things a little funky, and those fish are still trying to find their spots again.
And I'm going to remember something where you and I were wrong.
What's that?
A couple years ago, right about when we started the show back in 2013 and all that, we were talking about how much the snapper population is just growing by leaps and bounds, and we were hoping that it was going to be kind of more like it was in the 70s and 80s,
right.
Where, you know, somebody go down to the pier and catch and release a whole bunch of little snappers and stuff like that, and didn't see it.
Nope.
It didn't come to pass. And we really thought, both you and I were all pretty well convinced. I wouldn't say we were 100% with the idea, but I think we both had the idea that this was going to kind of take a rebound to days of old with all these snappers and stuff.
The weird part, though, is that the population or the numbers and the quality has stayed true for the last 2 years offshore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's absolutely amazing. So it's surprising that we haven't felt that inside.
Yeah.
Because you know, that's sustained. I mean, nothing's sustained, but I mean, it stayed consistent out there with the lanes and the mangs have just been
crazy. I'm going to go after
crazy.
Some, you know, in a kind of an abstract way. I think, you know, it's time to take the shrimping out of the estuary, and the more food available, the better things are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things we need to seriously look at. And I'm okay with grandfathering in, you know, somebody who's been here for years making their living on it, I think, but we do need to go at the Tampa Bay model and say, you know, if you don't live here, you don't work here, you can't get grandfathered in, and no, you cannot do that here.
Right.
I think it's boiling down to a matter of us with our cast nets, limiting the bait supplies. That's why I look more at glass minnows for health of the harbor than I do at white bait or thread fins anymore.
Right.
I used to be able to tell by the thread fins how the health of the harbor was going, but now I got to look at glass minnows.
Right.
Because when the thread fins or the white bait show up, too many people take them. You know?
Too many people take them, and now they're mixed so bad together because there are so few of both, like you were talking about earlier with science saying if they start two species schooling together, there's something to be questionable. It's hard to get a good assessment of what's going on out there when you go, well, that's Threadies, but no, there's some Greenies mixed in there. Oh, that's
and
Greenies.
There's some butterfish, and there's some spadefish, and there's some sugar trout.
And skipjacks.
Skipjacks, and all these different fish schooling together. We know there's a problem with some of the fish populations.
Right.
I'm not sure where that's going to be, but I think the next step is to keep the people who aren't here trying to make a living
stay away.
You know, doing commercial shrimping in the harbor. I think it's just something that's going to have to happen sooner or later, and see what that does. And then we're going to have to look seriously at the bait situation.
Right.
The decline in bait fish populations, and really look close to see if it's environmental, human, boats with cast nets, maybe a bit of everything.
Yeah, I think it's a conglomeration.
And really take a serious look at what we're doing to make sure that we're not hurting what we love the most.
Right.
And little by little, people are learning. They're starting to treat bait fish less like a nothing and more like a snook or a redfish. The same people who would never kill a snook for no reason, or, you know, really delicately and gingerly handle fish and, you know, appreciate the enjoyment and everything we're getting out of the sport and, you know, all this kind of stuff, taking good care of them, are now starting to look at bait fish more like that too. Really trying to understand that this is a vital part of what goes on, and we need the bait fish. We need it as food for wild fish, not just for bait.
Right.
And because bait starts out as basic food for fish, and we need to allow that to happen in some areas and to some degree. So there's but people are getting it. I'm very proud of the fact that people who come here as snowbirds, people who come here as visitors, tourists, people who live here are all starting to look at all this stuff and say, yes, I can make a difference, I can do better, and not relying on the government to come in and say, this is a new law and we can't do this for this season and that season. It's a whole underground, quiet movement. Again, 2016, who would have guessed, that people are really starting to take responsibility for what they're doing and trying to fix that problem. And hats off. I'm thoroughly impressed. Going back to PGI and Punta Gorda Canals, we were at Ponce de Leon Park. Going back into the PGI Canals, what's going on?
Black drum are scattered all over the place, and big ones, you know, 20, 30, 40, even 50 pounders we're seeing and hearing about.
Snook on the lights? Anybody seeing snook on the lights?
Snook are still on the lights, but they're getting fewer and fewer. But you're seeing them getting swapped out with a lot of the juvenile tarpon.
Yeah, I bought some underwater lights, and we're going to be selling them a little bit. I will say the better light is the one you get from people up on Veterans and underwater light place. Yeah. It is, if I was going to have the one that we have or the one that they have, the one they have is better. But this one has kind of a cool aspect because it does have a 12-volt hookup that you can put on your boat.
Oh, really?
So I'm really don't think it's, you know, strong enough. I put, you know, both of them in the water, one of the ones from up on the place on Veterans and underwater light people, and this one doesn't compare. It's not as bright, it's not as powerful. It's good, no issue with that, but I think the market for this one is going to be for the people fishing at night, carrying it with them, taking them out. It gives them a very strong, very good light to put off their boat, you know, snapper fishing at night, fishing up Placida Trestle, shrimping this winter.
It's going to be expensive.
It's over, I don't remember, $200 to $250. I don't remember exactly what the retail is. Let's say $225, just to call it in the middle. But it's a interesting light because of the 12-volt adaptability with it. But I honestly will tell you right now, we'll get them in pretty soon. But it's not as good as the ones that the place on Veterans is selling. You know, I hate to send them to another store to get their product, but if I was going to get one from behind a house, I would get that one. But I think this
and they're really nice people to deal with, so that makes it easier to send anybody. Yeah. You know.
So, but I think the one we're going to get is going to be the best bet for taking on the boat with you. Coming back into it, we've gone all the way around, and the one thing we got to hit now is the middle of the harbor.
Right.
And some spectacular things going on out through the open water harbor. It was the topic of last month's meeting at Luigi's Open Water Fishing because there was so much. And
did you talk about all the catfish that are out there?
We didn't talk about much on the catfish. We talked about more where to go. I've had minimum of five people who have found places that we talked about because we gave everybody a chart and showed them on the chart where these places were, what I look for, how I find the stuff, and why it makes a difference. Yeah. And we
there was a gentleman in here just before we started doing the show that was in here talking, and he actually was asking Kale some refresher questions.
And they're catching fish. Yep. They're having a great time, and it's all in the middle of the harbor. Whether whatever boat you can take, it really doesn't matter. From a little one to a great big one, if you got an inboard, outboard, an IO, inboards, outboards, I don't care. Every boat works for this
kayak,
kind of stuff.
Paddle boat.
I don't have a kayak. It's the one thing you can't get out in the middle of the harbor, and I do not encourage it.
It's not
You're
safe.
A target. I mean, too many big boats running in the middle of the harbor. You are not safe out there.
Okay,
in a kayak.
A paddle boat.
maybe, you know, that's going to be a lot of pedaling to get out of the way of somebody who's coming.
Using you for a marker?
Yes. No, I'm going to say you want a motor. You want gasoline power to get out of the way out there. Big flags, flares, and, you know, horns or something. A lot of seriously goofy people driving big boats out there.
Yeah.
But we have this different schools of black drum still spawning out through the harbor.
Yep.
They're still showing up. We're still getting reports of all these fish, and hundreds or thousands of fish averaging 40 pounds acting like they're tiny minnows. I mean, just going crazy in this massive mosaic of swimming and swirling, and it's crazy
it's
to
pretty
watch.
Pretty awesome.
And then we've got mackerel out there, Spanish mackerel. I haven't heard any kings, but I heard a bit of Spanish. A
bit of Spanish.
Ton of catfish.
Ton of catfish.
Sharks.
Lots of sharks. Lots of cobia, too.
Cobia. And a little bit bigger, a little better quality cobia. Not as many as what we're seeing in the Gulf, but better size, better quality cobia up here in the harbor. And so sharks, some goliath, a few gags. I mean, there's just such a variety of stuff all through the harbor.
Yeah.
And
scattered assortment of tarpon.
Oh, yeah, you can't, you know, you got to talk tarpon because they could be coming up and down the west side bar, the east side bar. They could be out in the middle holes. They could be up by the Mayaca. They're definitely going up river, coming out of the river in the mornings. So Fishville in the first thing in the morning, Gilcrest Pier first thing in the morning. I mean, we're talking daylight till about 9 o'clock, folks.
All right.
So it's a great time to be in Florida and go fishing. It's 77. Yeah. It's supposed to hit 77 today.
Water temperature.
No, air temperature.
It's 77.
Yeah, that's what they said, 77 today.
You're lying. It's hotter than that out there right now.
I don't believe it. Nobody from the Weather Channel wouldn't lie to me.
How about 97?
Yeah, well, I don't think so. It did drop. It's been warmer at night. And last night was humid.
Yeah, muggy.
I didn't get home till after 10 o'clock last night, and it was muggy last night when I hit the house.
Yeah.
It was nice. We were at the Applebee's out in Deep Creek, you know, just the other side of the interstate, and I was having dinner with Jim, our Rapala Jim, and with Matt from Rapala headquarters, and we had a great time. Amazing group of people up there at Rapala. But I didn't get back until after 10. And
the joys of being the boss. You got to go out there and schmooze and take care of business.
It wasn't even schmoozing because we talked a little bit about business, but more just getting to know each other. And he wanted to know what was going on in trends and all this kind of stuff. But he evolved more into talk just about general life. And what's amazing, his wife's family lives in the town where my daughter lives.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was really weird. He starts talking about this thing, and I said, "Do you know this town?" He's like, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I went to high school there." I went to, well, middle school there. And then we got talking, and it was just one of those crazy nights. We had a good discussion.
Cool.
And then it was about 9 o'clock. I realized I had one drink extra than I should have, so I had to wait around an hour or so before I felt like it was illegal to drive. So
there you go.
You know,
that's cool.
But yeah, it was good. It was a great night. And anything else we need to go over in the fishing reports?
Not that I can think of. Just go out there and take advantage of this beautiful water that we've got right now and all the different species there are. It's just awesome.
Yeah. And as we said, if you're planning a trip to Florida next year or whatever, times to look are as much in the spring and in the fall because it's pretty much the same at both ends, you know, once July and August go by. September, October are a lot like May and June.
Right. With one difference.
Go ahead.
Clarity of the water.
Yeah. The water's much darker in September, October.
Right. Because it's the
but
end
the
of the
But the hotels are a lot cheaper.
Oh, a whole lot cheaper.
The hotels are a lot cheaper.
But the fishing is basically a mirror image. I mean, it's...
And the one thing people think, well, the prices go up on stuff, well, the tourist season, that doesn't happen anymore.
No.
Years ago, some of the national chains would raise and lower the prices. The only thing you're going to see different is possibly a little different in the price of gas, but even that doesn't fluctuate as much
right.
seasonal.
Right.
But it's the price of the hotels is the big difference. They go up and down like they're drunk.
Yes.
You know, okay, we got a lot of people coming, so we raise the price. Okay, there's not as many people, so we lower the price.
It's like, look at mini season down in the Keys. I mean, for a two-day event or whatever it is, two-day or seven-day?
Two.
Two-day event. I mean, the hotels literally almost double their price.
Yeah.
And then it's right back down to whatever, $100 a night.
Yeah.
You know?
But it goes from 100 up to 300. And I think it's about a $100 variant. I think you can get a lot of rooms here for, you know, around $100, give or take, up and down from that a little bit. But right. when it gets to season, you're looking at 200, give or take, up and down $30 or so.
Right.
So, you know, that's the one thing about September, October. The water's darker. We've had a lot of rain by then. So the water's brown. It's not as pretty. And... May and June are definitely the more beautiful months, and because of the weather and the lack of rain, everything's clear and beautiful and everything you want to see in Florida, but it'll save you a lot of money coming
yeah.
in the fall.
But you'll catch the same fish. So that's
the same
the most
fish.
Awesome part about it.
Yeah, so it's actually pretty good. I would say excluding the Spanish mackerel.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that one.
Excluding the Spanish mackerel, and there's going to be somewhat less sharks. The rain are going to be coming out. So if you're
well,
doing sharks, you really want to do May and June.
Yeah, especially for the bigger ones. The smaller ones vary from year to year, it seems like. I mean, that one year we went out with your daughter and Terry.
Right.
And that was late August, early September, and we just creamed them and had a blast.
Yeah, but I was running the boat.
Yeah, well, that's true. I forgot. I forgot who I was dealing with. Sorry.
Yeah, no. It didn't have anything to do with that. But it's... For sharks and Spanish mackerel, this is definitely a better time of year. But for the tarpon, snook, redfish, and that kind of stuff,
yeah.
September, October is easily
yeah,
as good, if not better.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Anyway, boys and girls, let's see. I think it's time we leave you alone, let you get back to your lives. And thank you so much for letting us interrupt yours and share the stranger parts of ours. But Fish and Frank in the chair here, Robert in the chair across from me. And we appreciate you listening, and thank you so much. And to all the people who come down to Southwest Florida during the year and the people who live here, hats off to you guys. Excellent, excellent job with making corporate fishing stuff realize that we are important, that the people who buy this stuff are the end game of the whole thing. And that, you know, and thanks for making our lives possible. We'll see you on the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye. Say goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.